You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, February 7th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, justice correspondent at Think Progress, Ian Millhiser, on Neil Gorsuch, the nominee for the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm trying to work in the pro bono fibbing. I mean, who hasn't padded their resume and then ended up on the Supreme Court? What was that? That was weird. Did you do that? That was weird. Something's happened on the soundboard. Also on the program today, Trump's Muslim ban will be getting a hearing as both Trump and Republicans are now convinced that the media suppresses attacks on white people. Betsy DeVos getting a vote perhaps any moment may require Mike Pence to break a tie. Be the first time in history Vice President needs to help in confirming such an unqualified.
Tremendous.
Secretary of Education nominee, on top of one who has intense hostility to public schools. Also on the program today, the Labor Secretary nominee hired an undocumented worker.
Well, yeah, you pay them less, of course.
Cincinnati, now a sanctuary city, in San Francisco, now offering free college. Congress now sets its sights on all immigration. Fukushima reactor radiation at the highest level it's been since 2011.
Big league. Big things are happening.
Oh, yeah. Well, we just our reactors are going to have more radiation.
Yeah, maybe we'll have more, right? Maybe it's that's what Steve says.
Arkansas bans abortions after 14 weeks and lets dads veto abortions. Missouri, the 28th state to pass anti-union law. House attacks the meager public financing we have for elections. And the FCC attacks internet for people living in poverty. But I do have one good story. Martellus Bennett has made the Patriots great again. As you know, after the Super Bowl, the winning team is often invited to the White House to meet the president. Or, you know, I guess today they've updated that where you would just meet the guy who won the Electoral College. I guess he is the president, right? He was sworn in as president.
Yeah, sort of.
And that's where you go once you win the Super Bowl to go and you get the Russian Medal of Freedom. But that was a dumb joke. But Martellus Bennett, the tight end of the New England Patriots, Super Bowl winning Patriots, said he is not going to go to the White House. He's going to skip because of his opposition to Donald Trump. So he gets one of these. There you go. What?
Double up on it.
He is black. Ivanka, I want our child. Abortion vetoed.
So.
Oh my God, Michael.
Vito Corleone, everyone now.
So everyone good knows. For Martellus Bennett. I'm honestly, I'm obsessed with this guy now.
He's the best.
Because
it was depressing until it came along.
I, you know, obviously I watched the Super Bowl, but I did so with a tremendous amount of ambivalence. And Mila went through the same thing. She's like, I don't know if I can root for them because of Belichick and Tom Brady. I look at Tom Brady now and I don't see the world's most handsomest successful man anymore. I just see a man.
So weird how you guys are in lockstep with your feelings about the Patriots.
Mila?
Yeah.
She actually heard about this at school and came back and told me.
You didn't end up telling her anything about it.
Well,
you guys put
I did.
Yeah.
But she, I don't know why she brought it up on the day of the Super Bowl.
Daughter needs to have the views I have.
She did try and say something about Deflategate, and then I told her, you shut your mouth. Because that talk.
Goodell getting booed was the best moment of the
that
Super
kind of
Bowl.
Talk is
that was great.
I was ambivalent throughout the whole thing, I have to say, and she was too. Although it was pretty dramatic. I mean, it was a pretty dramatic game. She had to leave the room. She gets too uptight. Folks, Valentine's Day. Michael, oh wait, should I not even say that?
Whatever.
It's Michael. Fine. Michael didn't know what day Valentine's Day was, and apparently it's very complicated.
Maybe you didn't need to say all that.
Okay. Well, anyways.
Thank you.
But Michael, and
very
for others,
glad.
This isn't just for you, but this would apply to you. There's no one like your Valentine or Valentine's.
Thank God they find you boring.
This year, you can treat them to an unforgettable gift. Yeah. As unique as they all are. Right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
This is a total go-to for you.
Total wins.
Dude, imagine if you have to, you know, somehow for whatever reason miss Valentine's Day even. You give them a gift from Shari's Berries, and frankly, I would think they're going to be happier that you're not even there.
God, I'm so glad they find you boring.
Freshly dipped strawberries from Shari's Berries, starting at just $19.99 plus shipping. Or you can double the berries for just $10 more. Go to berries.com. Wow, getting
the Amber Alert. Yeah.
Go to berries.com and use my code CEDER, S-E-D-E-R. Help support our show by supporting our sponsors. Use my code CEDER. These berries are decadent. They're fresh. They're incredibly juicy and sweet. I have ruined paper here. Look it here. This is, you can see. That is strawberry juice.
I don't know if this is the most appealing way to talk about their lovely product.
It's
delicious.
You
and what you do with your Shari's Berries are not very elegant.
Everybody saw it.
Everybody saw it because we were streaming.
I know. Believe me, there was a lot of illness.
And Kelly brought it by. I was like, all right, I'll take one. And then
disgusting.
I had to have a second one.
And before you know
you
it.
You can choose berries dipped in white chocolate, milk, or dark chocolate. They got chocolate chips or swizzles or chopped nuts. You can surprise your Valentine at her office, her workplace, or at his home. Her coworkers are going to be a little bit jealous. His coworkers may eat them all. Who knows? Choose a gift from Shari's Berries' incredible collection of gifts. Your gift will be perfectly packaged in a gift box. Shari's Berries will deliver your gift fresh and on time, guaranteed, or your money back. There's only one way to get Shari's Berries starting at $19.99. Visit berries.com, berries.com. Click the microphone in the top right-hand corner and type in Cedar, S-E-D-E-R. Use my code Cedar, help support the show, and get yourself an amazing gift for your Valentine or Valentine's.
In a real pickle.
I'm not pointing any fingers. All right, a couple of notes about
Gorsuch. Your own
this is
ship.
An interview that I did with Ian Millhiser last week, and just a couple of backstory on Gorsuch. And you'll hear a lot of people say the guy is incredibly qualified for the court. Incredibly qualified. Now, that may be true in terms of as it goes. Maybe he's a good lawyer. I happen to think that if Donald Trump nominated Barack Obama, that the Democrats should not vote to confirm. I don't care who it would be. They should not vote to confirm based upon the Republicans having denied a nominee even a hearing under President Obama. Also, I would say, look, you know, we need full disclosure. For all we know, based upon your taxes, Gorsuch could have been working for you years ago. Or who? I mean, any of it. There's all sorts of reasons why I don't think that the Democrats should participate. However, if you do want to look, and Chuck Schumer has written that Gorsuch will need 60 votes, challenging McConnell to use the nuke and nuke the filibuster. But if you do want to talk about whether someone's suited to be on the Supreme Court, I think lying on your resume and lying on your submissions to the Senate Judiciary Committee for your earlier hearings, I think that would be disqualifying. And I'm curious for those people who think that Gorsuch is so qualified, whether or not that would be disqualifying. Lying to Congress.
Well,
here you have... When Trump introduced Gorsuch, said that he had demonstrated a commitment to helping the less fortunate by working in the Harvard Prison Legal Assistance Project and the Harvard Defenders. These are volunteer programs where law students basically gain real-life legal experience representing prison inmates and the poor. And... Wall Street Journal did an investigation into that claim. Roughly 36 students who participated in the two programs while Gorsuch was at Harvard Law School from 1988 to 1991. That's when I was across the river at BU Law. Hey, my cousin went then at that time. I got to ask her. Said that they had no recollection of his involvement whatsoever. If he was active in PLAP, the Prison Legal Assistance Project, I am sure I would remember him, said Elizabeth Buckley Lewis. She said that was her most meaningful experience at Harvard. The White House gave the Wall Street Journal the name of one Harvard Law School graduate who said he could corroborate that Judge Gorsuch was in the Defenders, right? Not in the Harvard Prison Legal Assistance Project. That guy... was named Chris Edel. He's a New York County prosecutor. And he said he attended a few weeks of training for the Defenders Program with Judge Gorsuch, either in 1990 or 91. They also lived together and were members of the Lincoln's Inn Society, a social club. Okay, so this guy lived with Gorsuch. They were roommates. What I am prepared to do is corroborate that Neil Gorsuch was in the Harvard Defenders. I have specific recollection of talking to him about one case, but I don't want to go into the details. I'd like to leave it there. That's
very convincing.
The endorser. An attorney using very legal, a legal response to this question of like, I can corroborate that Gorsuch was in the Harvard Defenders. Now, that could very well mean he went to a meeting and was in the Harvard Defenders for a meeting. And that at one point, Mr. Edel discussed a case that Mr. Edel was working on with Gorsuch. This should be a much, much bigger deal. And I have a feeling Senator Al Franken very well may make it one. Gorsuch did not appear in any yearbook photos for either of the groups during his 3 years at Harvard, nor was he listed among the other students as not pictured.
Humility.
Now, fortunately for Gorsuch, there are no archives as to who was members or not members or who worked it. There are no records kept by prisons that would establish he went to visit any clients. Not every official bio of Gorsuch names his involvement with the groups, but they are included in a biography posted online by President George Bush's White House after the judge's 2006 confirmation. On a Senate questionnaire in connection with the 2006 judicial appointment, Gorsuch answered a question about serving the disadvantage, in part by saying he had done pro bono work beginning in law school, citing the two programs. He said he helped Massachusetts inmates with respect to, among other things, hearings on disciplinary actions taken against them and represented defendants in criminal proceedings in Massachusetts state courts. Now, we are to believe that he actually went to state court and actually worked on cases significant enough to represent people in Massachusetts state courts, and no one involved with the program remembers his involvement whatsoever, and that his roommate at the time, in very legal terms, says that he was a member of one of those programs for a short period of time. That's as far as I will go.
He's like a real sort of power behind the throne kind of guy.
I mean,
he moved in the shadows while he was helping people.
I don't know why. I mean,
No, it's classic resume bullshit.
Yeah,
classic.
Except for when you fill out a questionnaire
and hand it in
to the judiciary.
Yeah, of course.
So,
lying.
With that said,
do you think there's a single Republican that will take that even remotely seriously?
No.
Of course
not. No.
Of course not.
No.
And if anything, I bet it. I honestly think that this would be positive in Trump's mind.
He showed he can.
Wait a second. He lied about helping black people, but he didn't do it, but he benefited from pretending he did. That's like street smarts. I mean, this guy's the best.
I did a similar thing of going to only a few like Spanish club meetings in high school to get that on the resume.
Yeah.
But I at least made the picture. Like I made.
Well, you got to be there for the picture. Everything else, this guy didn't know how to do it.
I feel gypped because I would never even... I would never even exaggerate on a resume.
Sad.
Mm. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, Ian Millhiser on the resume inflating Judge Gorsuch. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Justice editor of Think Progress and author of Injustice's SCOTUS History of Comforting the Comfortable and Afflicting the Afflicted, Ian Millhiser. Ian, welcome back to the program.
It's good to be back, even though it's in the midst of really terrible news.
Yes. Well, Donald Trump made his announcement last night in typical Trumpian fashion. He chose Judge Neil Gorsuch as his SCOTUS nominee. I think you and I spoke on Ring of Fire last week. I was a little bit surprised. I was convinced he would go with Hardiman just because his sister was friends with him. He really did deliver for the Chamber of Commerce, the Heritage Foundation. I mean, he did exactly what they wanted, and that is Neil Gorsuch, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the big question with every decision Donald Trump makes is who is actually making the decision, because Trump, frankly, doesn't really know a lot about policy or much of what he's doing. And he has this orbit of advisors who often want contradictory things. And then sometimes he may want something too. And what we know, excuse me, is that this nomination came down to two people, Thomas Hardiman, who was sort of the Trumpian hardliner on criminal justice. He had a decision on immigration, which suggested that he was a hardliner on immigration. And Neil Gorsuch, who's the corporate guy, who's the guy who wants to keep a progressive regulation from happening, keep environmental regulation from happening, keep progressive labor regulation from happening. The person that the Federalist Society, I am convinced, most wanted, because when you look at his record and when you look at everything that I've seen at Federalist Society events for the last 2 or 3 years, Gorsuch is determined to implement that agenda. And so who is making this decision? You know, the answer is the big business lawyers and, you know, the people who've been thinking for the last, you know, at least the last 4 or 5 years about how they can use the courts in order to effect a takeover of policy generally in this country.
All right. Before we dig into Gorsuch's views and record on issues that are important, I think, to the country, obviously, and to progressives. But I just want to broaden out here for a moment, and I want to get your opinion on this, because you have been, particularly in your book, you have been, you have a, I think, appropriately jaundiced view of the Supreme Court.
Yep.
But I want to even pull out a little further here, because I am of the opinion that short of nominating Pam Carlin, or someone like that, the Democrats should not even think twice or consider doing anything but filibustering this nominee, because Mitch McConnell has already set the table. We have the McConnell rule, which is you do not provide any opportunity to confirm a Supreme Court justice of a sitting president. I mean, that's the McConnell rule. I don't see any reason why the Democrats shouldn't do anything but follow that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Democrats, if they care about their own survival, need to do everything they can to try to block this nominee, and not just survival in the sense of whether or not, like, it'll still be possible to have anything other than Republican rule in this country, but survival in the sense that there are people in the streets who are saying, look, guys, we're not going to wait and see what Trump is, because we already know what he is. You know, we don't need these terrible nominees confirmed, and you've got to do everything in your power to stop them. And so if the Democrats want to survive a primary challenge, and I will pause here and say I have been positively encouraged by the statements I've heard from many Democratic senators. Most of them seem to get it, that their ability to keep their job depends upon them going hard against Neil Gorsuch. But, you know, it really is that big of a deal. If they want to keep their job, if they don't want their own base voters to rise up against them and rally behind a primary challenger, this is a vote that they've got to take. They got to do what they can to stop this guy.
Now, I mean, at the end of the day, they probably won't be able to, because this is, I mean, and you tell me if you have a different scenario and how this goes down. If the Democrats filibuster, Mitch McConnell is going to be forced to essentially nuke the filibuster for Supreme Court justices. Harry Reid did it for federal judges, but this is sort of the genuine nuking, if you will.
Right.
And that seems somewhat inevitable. And ultimately, in terms of the fate of the Supreme Court, seems largely to me irrelevant, right? Because
right.
I mean, short of literally a nuke going off, this is what's going to happen. The court is going to be controlled by right-wing Republicans for generations.
Yeah, no, I mean, what Mitch McConnell wants to do is he wants to have his cake and eat it, too. I mean, this happened in the Bush administration, too. What Republicans want is they want to leave the filibuster in place while simultaneously having Democrats be too scared to use it, because if they use it, then Republicans will take it away. And so in that case, what happens is that the filibuster isn't actually useful because Democrats refuse to use it. But when the Senate flips and suddenly Democrats are in charge of the Senate, then the filibuster is still there and Republicans will use it. And that is an insane equilibrium. Like the idea that Democrats would say, we're going to keep this thing in place so they can use it against us, but then we're not going to use it ourselves. That's ludicrous. That's terrible political strategy. So what Democrats need to accept is that Mitch McConnell can't have his cake and eat it too. So let him eat cake.
Right.
Let him do everything you can to block this guy. If for whatever reason he doesn't have the votes to nuke the filibuster, that is awesome. Then we keep Neil Gorsuch off the Supreme Court. And if Mitch McConnell does have the votes to nuke the filibuster, that is also awesome, because it means the filibuster is gone. And when Democrats are back in power, they don't have to deal with it either.
And so let me ask you just this, and then we'll move on to the implications of a Gorsuch. What about the argument? Well, if they filibuster Gorsuch and Mitch McConnell, does not have the votes to nuke the filibuster, but probably will the next time the Democrats filibuster, could they get someone worse? I mean, could there be someone worse than a Neil Gorsuch?
I mean, Neil Gorsuch is, the truth is there's always someone worse. I mean, you could put Steve Bannon on the Supreme Court. I guess that would be worse. But, I mean, Neil Gorsuch is as bad as it comes. I mean, as bad as we're reasonably likely to see. I mean, he is probably to Scalia's right. It is possible that he is another Thomas, and Thomas thinks that most of the New Deal is unconstitutional. His record shows that he is both extraordinarily thoughtful about how to dismantle things that stand in the way of big business and that protect the environment and protect workers, but also that he is very tied into where the zeitgeist is in groups like the Federalist Society. The most important single thing to know about Neil Gorsuch is a very technical thing. There's this doctrine called the Chevron Doctrine, and Chevron says that essentially courts should approach federal agencies with a certain degree of modesty and should give them a fair amount of deference when they regulate. And what that means is that when you have a Republican president, you have a fair amount of deregulation. When you have a Democratic president, you see stronger labor rules, stronger environmental rules, stronger anti-discrimination rules, and so on and so forth. So elections matter. What Gorsuch wants to do is get rid of Chevron, which means that every time a president wants to put a regulation in place, every time an administration wants to put a regulation in place, they're basically going to have to ask the court's permission to do so. And who's going to control the courts? Five Republicans are going to control the courts. So it means that Republican presidents will basically have to ask permission from their friends, and their friends will say, sure. And the next Democratic president, who it is going to have to get permission from Neil Gorsuch. And I don't think that that's going to happen very often. So he's thought very smartly, very intentionally about how you can manipulate obscure legal doctrines in order to entrench conservative rule. He's thought very smartly about how you can do it in a way where it's not immediately apparent what he's doing. This guy is really dangerous. I mean, if what he intends to do is just, write a bunch of opinions saying explicitly, yeah, I'm going to get rid of the minimum wage, and I'm going to get rid of Roe v. Wade and stuff like that, at least you see it coming. But what's so dangerous about this guy, if you will do it in ways that you're going to need a good lawyer to explain to you what happened, but it's going to be just as traumatic when it happens.
So he will fashion decisions that leave toe holds for future decisions that don't necessarily look like toe holds. They just look like features on the wall, if you will. And then, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to do more than that. I mean, what he's going to do is like, let's say that you want to get rid of the minimum wage. You know, there's two ways you could do that. You could be honest and you could write an opinion saying the minimum wage is hereby struck down. And then everyone knows what you've done and they know who to blame. Or you can put up barriers to enforcement. You can, you know, make it so that rules that allow the agencies to decide who is governed by a labor law, you diminish their ability to expand the universe of people who are protected. You put obstacles in the way of plaintiffs. So even if their rights have been violated, they can't get into court. There's all sorts of technical ways. You can make it so that companies can force people into arbitration where the arbiters are picked by the company instead of being able to go to real courts. There's all sorts of ways that a smart judge can come up with, if they're really devious, to take away your rights and you don't even realize it's happening.
And so
you don't
that,
realize it's happening.
So yeah. So the analogy is more like restrictions on abortion, like if you're a provider, you need to have access to a hospital as opposed to an outpatient
right.
facility, or the analog with the immigration ban. We're not discriminating against Muslims. We're only mentioning 7 majority Muslim countries, and the only waiver is if you're part of the minority religion in those countries. So it ends up being a de facto a Muslim discrimination. All right. Well, let's go through a couple of key topics. Again, from my perspective, more so that people understand what is coming down the pike and what the implications of a Republican administration are than an argument to Democratic senators as to why they should filibuster Gorsuch, because I still believe they should filibuster Gorsuch because he's the nominee, period.
Right.
All right, so let's talk about reproductive rights. What's a Gorsuch record on reproductive rights?
I mean, it's really as conservative as it could be. I mean, remember the Hobby Lobby case about, you know, whether a woman's boss has a say in if they get birth control or not?
Yes.
He voted the wrong way in the Hobby Lobby case. It came up through his court. He voted to say that if you have a religious objection to birth control, then you can potentially cut off your employee's right to get birth control coverage. You know, so we already know his stance on that issue. He wrote a book about euthanasia, but it sort of drifts with the rhetoric of the anti-abortion movement. And it's just not a far stretch to think that, based on that book, that he would be a vote to strike down Roe. On top of that, there was a case involving Planned Parenthood where the governor of Utah tried to cut off Planned Parenthood's funding. A panel of 3 judges on his court that didn't include Gorsuch voted to temporarily restore those funds. And Gorsuch used a very unusual process, one that is not used typically for these kinds of cases, really not used very much at all, to try to get those funds cut off again. He didn't succeed because he didn't have the votes. But, you know, he sort of manipulated the court's rules in a way in a case that didn't have much legal significance at all, but obviously had a tremendous amount of significance to the women who needed Planned Parenthood services, in order to try to cut off their funding. So on reproductive choice issues, I think he is going to be as conservative as he possibly could be, you know, in the vein of someone like Justice Scalia.
My understanding is that he is on the issue of, and you mentioned Chevron, which if you follow to its logical conclusion, gives you the answers to a lot of questions one might have about Gorsuch as to the government's ability to regulate our society and to provide protections for our society and protections for workers and consumers and citizens. But let's talk about money in politics. My understanding is that when it comes to something like Citizens United, he is to the right of the Citizens United ruling.
Yeah, so he has a few campaign finance cases. I mean, I will say about these that, like, I think they're more on the margins of the campaign finance issues than Citizens United did, which really cut out the heart of our ability to regulate it. I don't want to overstate based on the evidence that I have what we have. But what we have seen is that when faced with a campaign finance question, he has been skeptical of campaign finance laws.
And what else stands out from his record to you?
I think the big things, like I said, is, you know, he's got this thick record of reproductive choice. The Chevron thing is a huge deal. I mean, it is the biggest thing. It would be arguably the biggest shift that had happened to this any Supreme Court doctrine in the last 30 years. If the court gets rid of Chevron, it's that big of a deal because it fundamentally alters the nature of what kind of government we have and how much elections matter when we elect a new president. The other thing that I will say, and this is somewhat ambiguous, is that he has said some things about overcriminalization that, you know, at least some people looked at it and said, well, maybe this means he'll be good on criminal justice issues. What's interesting, though, is that his critiques of the criminal justice system have largely aligned with the critiques of business groups that are saying, like, hey, we don't want to have to deal with all this regulatory compliance and, like, we have to hire these lawyers because all these people say that it's illegal for us to, you know, not put these chemicals in our food or something like that, and we don't want to have to deal with that. And so I think that fits in with his broader notion. He speaks with a tremendous amount of sympathy to business litigators, which I guess he used to be, and just how hard it is for them to win their cases and how it's so burdensome for them and it's so burdensome from the companies. And I think that's where his sympathies lie. I mean, again, what strikes me about this guy, as I said in the beginning, it came down to two finalists. One was the Trumpian guy, who's a real hardliner against the kinds of groups that Trump likes to pick on in order to score votes with certain people. And the other was the corporate guy who doesn't so much want to drain the swamp as wallow in it. And who did Trump pick? He picked the corporate guy.
Right. Well, I mean, I think you made the point at the beginning of this interview that that I think it's really just a function of which advisor Donald Trump is choosing to listen to. And I think there's every indication that when you get to domestic policy, it's a Mike Pence and that wing of the administration, the corporatist wing, carries the day on most of those things. I mean, for all we know, he has the entire portfolio. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, yeah. I mean, one thing that Trump, I think, has been very clear about with the Supreme Court generally is that he views this as a transaction. You know, he said when he was a candidate, he would say, look, like, you got to vote for me because I'll give you the Supreme Court. The reason he laid out all his, like, possible nominees in advance is because he wanted to convey to Republicans who don't like Trump, but who really care about keeping Republican control of the Supreme Court, like, hey, if you vote for me, this is what you get out of the deal. He viewed it as the same way as if he was buying a hotel. Like, I want to buy your votes, and I know that this is the thing I've got to give you in the transaction in order to get your votes. And now you voted for me, and so I am now giving you, okay, like, you're going to sell me a hotel, I'm going to give you a little bit of money. He's saying, okay, you're going to sell me your vote, so I'll give you the justice that you want.
Right. And I, you know, that's what politicians do. This guy has virtually no, I think, sort of understanding or attachment to investment in these issues. And so it was particularly easy for him. And we can see the equation here, too. Right. We can go from Mitch McConnell making sure that that seat was kept open to 20% of the voters for Donald Trump voting for him because they thought because of the Supreme Court, which was in play because of that open seat, that 4-4 tie made it that much more dramatic. And then Donald Trump delivers as any smart politician would do. And I just hope that the Democrats in the Senate understand that concept, because I think there is, you know, I think their voters are far out ahead of them on this, and hopefully they're coming along for the ride.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And like I said, I think the early signs are positive. I mean, Schumer had a much stronger statement than I thought he would. The minority leader, Feinstein, who is now the chair of the Judiciary Committee, who is not been the best Democrat on judges, had a pretty strong statement questioning Gorsuch's record on choice. And then you had a whole group of stuff. I mean, Sherrod Brown and Ron Wyden were out minutes after the announcement, not just opposing Gorsuch, but saying, like, here are the specific reasons citing his record why I cannot support this nominee.
Merkley was also out there saying filibuster, I think, 20 minutes after.
Merkley was out there. Markey was out there. I mean, Warren was out there.
Let me ask you this. Lastly, the critiques I have seen, at least from Warren and a couple others, have been on the positions that Gorsuch holds, and a story that appeared yesterday. Before, frankly, 2,000 to 5,000 people assembled outside of Chuck Schumer's residence in Brooklyn or across the street, was that Chuck Schumer was getting on Merkley for coming out so early about filibuster without even knowing who the nominee was. From your perspective, and this is more of a political question: should the filibuster of Gorsuch be a function of Gorsuch, or should it be a function of the process that the Republicans initiated under Obama? Just from a political, if you have an opinion on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think my answer is both. On the one hand, like, what's going to the people who get to be Supreme Court nominees have been grooming themselves and have been groomed for this moment for the last quarter century. I mean, you have to decide when you're like in your early 20s that like you're going to do what it takes to have the possibility of a Supreme Court justice to even have the chance. So when Gorsuch gets into his confirmation hearing, he's going to appear polished. He's going to appear smart. He's going to appear likable. And the only way I think to disarm that bomb is to say, yeah, this really nice guy that you see speaking, here's all the terrible things he's going to do to you. So you have to go after his record. At the same time, and I mean, I went back and listened to President Obama's speech from when he announced the Garland nomination. And what he said is, look, like, if this process gets screwed up in the way that Mitch McConnell was then threatening to do it, then it casts a cloud of illegitimacy over the entire Supreme Court. You know, if Neil Gorsuch is confirmed, he will never be a legitimate justice. He will always be the occupant of a stolen seat. And every 5-4 decision that is handed down with him in the majority will come with an asterisk next to it, saying that this didn't happen because of the rule of law. This happened because of the rawest exercise of political power. And that's scary place for a country to be in, because, you know, the Supreme Court has no army and navy. It doesn't get to execute its own decisions. It hands down a decision and people follow it because they believe in the integrity of the Supreme Court. And what Mitch McConnell has done is destroyed that integrity. He has taken us now to a place where we can no longer pick up a Supreme Court decision and say whether I like this or not. I know that this was done through a legitimate, lawful process, and it is valid under a constitutional system that I need to live with, because the alternative is much worse. Instead, we're going to pick up these decisions and we're going to say this is just raw, vomitous power. And ultimately, I think that could be a severe blow to the rule of law in this country.
Ian Millhiser, justice editor of Think Progress, author of Injustices, SCOTUS's History of Comforting the Comfortable and Afflicting the Afflicted. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Going to take a break, head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will take your phone calls at 646-257-3920, read your IMs, and play some sound clips. We should let you know that Betsy DeVos has now been confirmed by the Senate, requiring a 51st vote by Vice President Mike Pence to seat Betsy DeVos. And we've got a clip. Well, let's play this clip from Al Franken right now, because I think this is really the most telling thing. If ideologically you are in favor of destroying the public school as an institution, I'm not saying that Betsy DeVos will be in a position to do this as chair of the Department of Education, but she certainly has expressed a desire to do that. If you are in favor of that, for ideological reasons, you just don't believe that society should be educating people in public schools. Rather, what we should do is provide subsidies for people to send their children to private schools or parochial schools. And if the subsidy's not enough, then they go to a really crappy one. But even if you believe that ideologically, you couldn't really find somebody who knew less about what they were talking about, it appeared, about the idea of education than Betsy DeVos. So Al Franken, as part of the Democratic talkathon, they had 24 hours they could maintain to keep talking and, I guess, ultimately convince one Republican to defect. There were two who did, Murkowski and Collins. They were looking for a third. Al Franken brings up the most salient point, and that essentially is that Donald Trump is the Republican Party. The Republican Party is Donald Trump. They are going to give him what he wants, and he's going to give them what they want.
But I'd like to close by asking a few questions of my colleagues who are still considering a vote in her favor. If Mrs. DeVos's performance didn't convince you that she lacks the qualifications for this job, what would have to have happened in that hearing in order to convince you? If you cannot bring yourself to vote against this nominee, is there anyone President Trump could nominate for any position that you could vote against? And if we cannot set party loyalty aside long enough to perform the essential duty of vetting the president's nominees, what are we even doing here? Mr. President, the Constitution gives us that power to reject cabinet nominations specifically so that we can prevent fundamentally ill-equipped nominees like Betsy DeVos from assuming positions of power for which they are not qualified. Let's do our job. For the sake of our children, let's do our job. I yield the floor.
Well said. I don't think it was going to convince any of those Republicans, but the name of the game here is to put pressure on those senators, guys like Jeff Flake, Dean Heller, who may feel a little pressure from appointing someone this laughably bad. For confirming, I should say. Al Franken, maybe your next Democratic nominee.
Warren Franken, 2020.
That's what Kelly says. Warren Franken, 2020.
In that order.
And now Michael says off mic, Sanders.
What?
Sanders Franken.
Sanders Franken.
Be a little
yeah.
old though.
He seems pretty robust to me.
He does.
Most of these other people look.
But let's get a lady in there. An angry.
Do we really want to go down that road again? I'm just kidding. I mean, I'm totally joking.
That
was not joking.
Not funny.
It was funny. I was just giving him that look.
Stop it.
Michael got faced. All right, folks, going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, 646-257-3920. Remember, this show relies on its members for 90, what are we at now, 94? We got to do the books. I'm joking. I don't know. Something 90-something percent of our revenue comes from its members. If you have the resources, please become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. If you buy crap from Amazon or Jet.com, you can do so at MajorityReportKickback.com. People sometimes ask, how can I do a one-off donation, particularly if I don't want to do PayPal? And you can do it on our YouTube channel. Can they do it at any time, Kelly, with that super chat?
During the live stream.
During the live stream.
Yeah.
Only. Okay.
Yes, that is the unfortunate downfall of not having fan funding, which Super Chat is now our new fan funding.
Well, all right. So there's that.
Yes, please donate. We need every penny.
We do.
But you can IM me at Majority FM. We'll take a quick break. Be right back.